Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Informal Paranormal. Today is Monday, July 12, 2010. This is Doug Kelly here with John Rossi. John.
Hey, everyone. How y'all doing?
And we also have Sideshow Mike with us tonight. Hey, Mike.
What's up, guys?
Mike will be screening our calls, provided that hell freezes over and we get some tonight. I'm just trying to be entertaining for Gregory. We'd like to welcome everybody in chat, those of you who are listening but not in chat, listening on the sly, and those of you who are listening to this archive. We are glad you could join us tonight. Tonight we're going to be talking about demonology and remote viewing and whatever else may happen to come up. If you are listening to this live, we invite you to get in on the action. It's painless, it's free, and John doesn't bite hard. So call us up. The numbers are on your screen, or if you have a headset on your computer, you can use that click to talk button. I think it's a Skype or something. So what do y'all want to talk about first, demonology or remote viewing?
Well, was there something you wanted to talk about related to Paranexus?
Oh, sure. We can talk about that. But I'm going to talk about that at the end, if you don't mind, because there might be a few more folks on in the chat room and listening at that point. So let's talk about your stuff while there's nobody listening.
All right. Well.
Oh, is that it? That's all I get? I get nothing for that?
Oh, well, not yet. You know, there'll be a payback.
Oh, that's the passive-aggressive approach. Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So, demonology, okay. Remote viewing.
Let's go with demonology. So,
okay, Doug's possessed. How do I get exorcised?
Now, seriously, what I wanted to talk about demonologists is the fact that there's so many people running around saying they're demonologists, and you know the reality is they're not. And you know, over the years, I've had the opportunity to talk with a number of people who said they were demonologists, yet they were basically uninformed. Because, you know, first of all, demonology is a religious construct. It's part of a religious-based belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I tend to find very amusing is that a lot of demonologists don't really quite have a handle on that. And, you know, I'll ask them, like, for instance, where do you get your authority to be a demonologist? Well, I get it from the Bible. And I said, well, specifically where? And at that point, you know, it tends to end up getting real defensive and you don't get any answers. You know, there's, in most of the major religions, there is some form of demonology type, exorcist type activity. But you know, it's part of a formal belief system, and there's like checks and balances, there's oversight, there's training. And my problem is with all these people, quote unquote demonologists that are running around now, is they have no oversight, they have no training, and they basically have absolutely no understanding in terms of what a demonologist is. And, you know, I think what they do is very damaging. I think it makes it that much harder for the rest of us who are investigators. You know, I think it causes people to, you know, basically revert back to the Hollywood scary drama kind of situation when it comes to, you know, hauntings and related stuff. You know, you go and look on some of these demonologist sites, and they're actually pretty scary in the sense that, you know, they've got all these demonic recordings.
So what's wrong with it? What's wrong with demonology? What's wrong with it?
Well, first of all, you know, if you go to the sites and you listen to these quote unquote demon recordings, it sounds like the EVPs that we routinely get all the time. And there's nothing threatening or scary about it, and yet they'll take that EVP of, you know, this voice, and you know they're telling their clients that, you know, the house is possessed or there's demons and you're under oppression and all this other kind of stuff. And what they're citing as evidence is just a routine, non-threatening EVP. So, you know, sometimes, you know, in talking with some of these, you know, self-proclaimed demonologists, you know, it becomes apparent that all spirit activity in their mind is demonic. So,
isn't it?
Well, I don't think it is. You know?
Well, so in essence, what you're saying is that the fact that they're propagating fear is really where it's breaking down the most.
Well,
you know, they're hurting the client. You know, that's essentially what's going on here. They walk into a place, they get EVPs, and automatically proclaiming demon.
Right. Absolutely. And the thing is it's not even like, you know, they don't even seem to care whether or not what that client's belief system is. They're going to shove their belief system down that client's throat. And, you know, that's simply wrong.
Well, part of that reason, too, though, is that the United States is largely a Christian-based nation, right? I mean, a lot of Christians. I think that number is dwindling somewhat, and it's, the United States is much more Christian than perhaps some European countries. They've been around longer, and, you know, things have changed. So I think a lot of these demonologists just assume that people, because they're Christian, they have that basic belief system that, you know, the devil is out to get you and his minions, and, you know, there's this battle in heaven and battle on earth, and we're all going to freaking die if we live long enough, and that kind of thing. So, they're assuming. But here's what I would like to throw out. If you're listening live and you believe in demons and you have a case to make for their existence, and I'm talking about an objective case that is not based on a belief system, because, you know, look, I don't recognize the Bible as an authority, so I can't accept that as any kind of proof of anything. Well, yeah, I won't go into that. So if you can make a case, I mean, I'd be willing to hear it. Now, let's draw a distinction here, because there's some talk in the chat about good spirits and bad spirits. Would you agree that there are good spirits and bad spirits, same as good people, bad people?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're not really talking about negative spirits, negative energies, malevolent spirits, because they're malevolent people. They're likely malevolent spirits. So that's not what we're talking about. We're really talking about a religious construct, demonology, which has been around for thousands of years and is a fear-based phenomena. So I wanted to make that distinction. Are we done now?
Well,
here's another case in point I'd like to bring up. You know, with these poltergeist cases and the projection from a client, you know, in theory, that's causing the poltergeist, would you say it's possible that somebody's belief system being so deeply rooted could produce a pseudo-demon?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that could be what people are experiencing. And why they think there's demons is because they're actually projecting a pseudo entity, for a better term of it, and they're experiencing it. And so there are people around them, as with poltergeist cases.
Well, and there's a point in the chat room. Kathy makes a good point. She says, that's my point. We can't prove much of anything yet, not even spirits, human or otherwise. She is correct. And Sharon makes the point of contention the name demon. And I would say yes, but also the basis for it. Go ahead.
See, I have less of an issue with the word demon because, you know, first of all, I think that in our field, people go absolutely insane over names. And maybe we're talking about the same phenomena and we have different names, yet we get so wrapped up over naming something that we kind of lose the point. And my issue is actually with these people running around saying they're demonologists and behaving in a way that's very damaging for people that are in crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where my issue is these people are running around, they're saying they're demonologists, they're not even religiously trained. You know, they have no true authority, they have no oversight. Yet they're running around doing all these things that are potentially very damaging to a person. So, you know, that's, you know, my issue is more with the whole concept of these people running around and rather recklessly putting their belief system on people who are, you know, in crisis. You know, like for instance, my team. We have pagans on my team. We have Christians on our team. We have atheists. And you know what? Everyone gets along fine because it's not about belief systems. It's about going in, objectively investigating, and, you know, attempting to help the client in an appropriate way. Yet these other folks have an agenda, and they bring their agenda into the investigation, and they bring their agenda into contact with people who are in crisis. And, you know, I have a problem with that. I just, you know, fundamentally have a problem with that.
Well, it's the fear base, right?
Well, I mean, it's the fear base. It's also the whole concept of you have someone who's in crisis, so they're vulnerable. And so you're going to base, and so you're going to end up pushing, you know, what could be an alien belief system on them, you know, or they may even be in a situation where they have decided for whatever reason they're not going to be religious, you know, they've decided not to be in the church or whatever, and you're going to go in there and tell this person or that, look, you know, you need to, you know, get baptized and you need to find the Lord and you need to go to church on Sundays, and if not, you know, this demon's going to destroy your family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like my head wants to explode when I hear stuff like that because it's just further traumatizing the family and it's just adding a whole nother layer of, I don't know, crisis, if you will, to that family.
Well, it doesn't help. It's anything fear-based. Look, you know, let everybody know. I mean, I've said this before. I grew up believing in demons. I grew up terrified of demons. And was afraid of them as recently as 10 years ago, you know, because that was all the religious programming, you know, that they're out to get you, they can do all these funky things, but the truth of the matter is as much as I was afraid of them throughout my religious years, they never bothered me. You hear the folklorish stories that run around, but there was never any evidence of anything that really happened, and that's one of the big points. People are, and especially so many people in paranormal field, are so afraid of these demons, and they talk about them like, you know, throw them around like, yeah, I got a malevolent case, you know, I got a demon case, and it's like, no, you don't. Where are they? Where is the harm? You know, how is that fear justified? That's my point. Are there some negative energies? Yes, but they're all impotent. They can't do anything. You know, and if they do something, I said do. If they do something, you know, how can we say that it's not instigated on the part of an agent as a psychokinetic thing?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct in terms of the, you know, PK type activity. Now, you know, let's take, for instance, let's say we have a homicidal maniac that dies. And, you know, he ends up being an earthbound spirit, and he ends up, you know, for whatever reason, deciding to interact with people, and probably not in a nice way. Well, you know, in life, he was horrible. So in death, he's going to probably remain horrible. And if he has the ability, you know, if he has PK ability at any level, how that manifests is going to probably not be in, you know, hearts and flowers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Well, and there's some talk in the chat room too about, yes, we have to understand their beliefs in order to help them. That's true. And let's get this discussion in the proper perspective. First of all, this discussion among us is aimed at researchers. It's aimed at people in the field who are doing investigations and researching this stuff, and it's designed to get people to think, especially researchers. So, you know, that's kind of where we're coming from on this whole thing. And the point is well made. Yes, we need to understand their belief systems in order to help them. And as John was bringing out, all the more so, we need to understand it on an even deeper level or on a higher level, because we understand that this fear of demons is really misplaced. There is nothing there. There's no reason to be afraid. And the demons that exist are the demons in people's heads for the most part. And those are the only ones that can really hurt a person is their own demons.
So, you know, and I understand how people are saying, you know, you got to understand what their belief system is. Now, if someone has a belief system, let's say they're of the Catholic faith, and they believe that they've got a demon in their house and they're being oppressed by it, and they choose to bring in a priest to address it at that level, then that's a choice that they've made,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm okay with it because they made that choice. My problem is the people that come into these situations and start pushing belief systems onto people.
How do they do that?
How do they do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they go in there, and the family's having a haunting or something like that, and the investigator shows up, and then decides it's demonic, and says, "Oh, your house is infested with demons, and we need to do a rite of exorcism," and there it goes. You know, these people don't necessarily have a choice in that. You know, they didn't. That's not what they called the investigators up for. You know,
mm-hmm.
So again, you know, it's about being respectful in terms of the client's belief system, and not taking your belief system and ramming it down their throat.
Right.
But also, you know, getting back to the fact that there's all these people running around saying they're demonologists, and they're simply not.
Well, how do you become one then? What would constitute a demonologist in your opinion?
Well, since it's a religiously based belief system, in terms of like the Catholic Church, you know, has training and protocol for that. The a Muslim faith does. The Jewish faith does. I believe that the Taoist monks have some version of it. You know, but you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a formalized training with oversight and protocols incorporated into that religious belief system. These people that are showing up, you know, are not like that. You know, most of the time, you know, they probably have no idea what's in the Bible. Because, you know, they're saying, you know, oh, well, I hear this all the time.
Some of them do.
Well, some do, but the majority don't that I've met. You know, that's my mm-hmm. experience. You know, they come in, you know, and they'll say, oh, well, you know, there's only demons because the Bible doesn't say anything about ghosts and spirits. Well, that's not true.
You're correct. That is actually a rather common belief among especially fundamentalist religions, is that any of this ghost stuff is not, they're not people. They're demons masquerading as people.
There's multiple passages in the Bible that says otherwise. So again, you know, it's like, you know, they have their authority by the Bible, but they don't even have their Bible right.
Well, and, you know that one. That's a lot of interpretation there.
And, you know, just getting back to it, you know, here's somebody going in there with no level of oversight. you know. And again, you know, it's like if you're going to truly be a demonologist and be operating within the construct of a religious belief system, then you need to do it right. You know what I'm saying? You just need to.
Well, you're better than me. I just say don't do it.
Well, no, but you know what I'm saying? You know, you know me, Doug. I don't tell people what to believe. My problem is what I you know, these demonologists that are running around, you know, it's, first of all, they're not demonologists. They're jackasses. Because, no, I'm serious.
Tell us what you really think now.
No, I am telling you what I really think. Well, actually,
don't water it down.
No, because, you know, these people, you know, they have, I don't know whether it's, they have this, like, white knight mentality. They want to come in and they want to rescue someone, and they want that, or they want to make sure that their name gets splashed in the newspaper about being, you know, the fearless, tough demon fighter kind of thing. And you know what? It's like, geez, whatever happened about doing right by the client?
Well, I'm just glad to hear you saying this stuff, because now people won't bitch at me so much, they'll start bitching at you.
No more protesters in Doug's yard.
That's right. They all moved to John's yard. Well,
You wouldn't believe the grief that I get up here. I can't tell you how often I've been told that I do the devil's work. So, you know.
Like, yeah.
Hey, Gregory had a question. Gregory had a question. He wants to know how someone can be trained in demonology, actually.
Well, like I said, you know, within like the Catholic Church, there's actually outside of Rome, there's a essentially an exorcist school where priests go there, and they're specifically trained on how to do exorcisms and stuff like that. I'm not familiar exactly how the Muslim and Jewish faith does it, but I know that, you know, there's mechanisms within both of those faiths to essentially do exorcisms. Now, they're called something different, but when it comes down to it, that's really what's happening. So,
you know, it's my understanding that in the Catholic faith, in terms of exorcisms, it's my understanding, I could be wrong, but it's my understanding that they really field their cases. In other words, they don't just jump on any alleged possession or anything like that.
Absolutely.
It's really tough to get some, you know, a priest to come in and do any kind of a church-sanctioned exorcism or even look into it, because I think they understand that this kind of thing is so bloody rare that, you know, it just, it's like a non-issue almost.
You know, certain rites of exorcism can be authorized by a bishop. And then, as Gregory says, there's certain stuff that actually has to have Vatican approval. And you know what? There's some really stringent guidelines, if you will, in terms of, you know, this isn't the kind of thing that happens quickly. There's a lot of people reviewing it and part of the decision-making process. And, you know, that's not what we have going on here with these other quote-unquote demonologists. You know, I think that, you know, these guys run out and they read a book that the Warrens wrote, and all of a sudden they're now demonologists, and it's like,
well,
I don't think so.
Here's another problem that I have with the whole demonology thing, is that essentially what they're saying is that humans have this power given to them by God to basically control demons, to banish them, to get them out. They do it, in, you know, with the authority of God, so to speak. But it's also very closely related to this concept that somehow, by saying certain words, like Latin words or whatever, you know, these spirits can be controlled. These demons can be controlled by humans. It's like putting these, whatever they are, whatever the saints are, these medals, these coins or whatever, in four corners of the yard, putting oil on the around the windows and the doors and things like that. And I look at that and I think, honestly, what effect could that possibly have?
Well, I don't think it has any effect actually on the demon, but where I think it has the effect is on the person who is the client. If that client's belief system is, I'm protected and I'm empowered by these objects, then that's the power. But it comes back to what you always talk about, empowering the client.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a rather roundabout way, and not directly acknowledging that the client actually has the power anyway.
Yeah, self-empowerment through proxy.
Well, yeah, essentially. You know?
Yeah.
Well, and that's the point. So it all keeps coming back down to the client taking their power back, whether it's through a belief system, a trigger, a placebo, a crutch. You know, it's a prophylactic approach to taking your power back. But that's really what has to happen. And in my opinion, my position on this is that when a person takes their power back, everything in their life changes for the better. Their boundaries, because that's essentially what they're doing, is they're protecting their boundaries now. Because if, in fact, there were demons or and malevolent spirits and all that, and these people are being bothered by them, it's a heinous boundary violation. That's all this is. And when a person takes their power back, they put their foot down, they stand up to them and say no more. It's almost like there's this cosmic law of respect for free will. Well, if somebody does that, they can't do it. I mean, that's what it would appear to be, because every time somebody takes their power back, this stuff stops. And it's not just haunting stuff either. We've talked about this in the past.
Right.
So let's keep dwindling this down, or whittling it down, I guess is a better word.
Well,
the
thing of it is, go ahead.
The problem with the whole demonology is, number one, these investigators who do this are teaching the client something which honestly is not factual. They're perpetuating a belief in mythology, and they're creating a further basis of fear. That's not good. Fear is never a good solution to the situation. Mike?
No, I was going to say, on a personal level, you know, I've experienced that whole awakening process, I guess, about taking your power back. And for my own situation, if I were on a deeper religious level, I would have said I was dealing with demons, you know, because they fit the bill. And I was lucky enough, I guess, in my situation to understand what, you know, kind of what I was dealing with. And just the whole idea about the self-empowerment is so powerful. And until you experience it yourself, it's just, you cannot understand how deep that really goes. You know, and it's just, I'm here. I'm here to tout it, man. I mean, it's just, it is every bit of what Doug's saying.
So your abduction stuff pretty much stopped cold, didn't it? A year and a half ago.
Well, now understand, the abduction stuff stopped. I still got a little bit of, I want to say it's RSPK type stuff going on, but I don't have any problems with being the abduction phenomena anymore. And it's because I set boundaries. I started saying, no, I'm not allowing this anymore, and stopped being scared and excuse me, audience, I actually was becoming pissed about it, and to the point where I was ready to fight. And that actually stopped the situation. So,
fear goes down.
Absolutely, man. And I cannot express on how deep a level that affects you. I mean, even my life's changed a lot. And how people view me, it's amazing. It really is.
So the whole point of this is, if you're an investigator, and if you even halfway think that demons could be a problem, rethink it, because that's not what's going on. We really need to look at the client psychology before we deal with this kind of thing. In other words, what are the demons of the mind before any other demons? And never spread fear, because when you do that, you're doing harm. You know, and our motto is do no harm. Don't spread fear, because fear will never create anything. These people who are, a lot of these cases won't resolve themselves because the people are still afraid. They're basically still in fear. Think about it. Okay, we've had the demonologists come in, they've put the metals around, they've done the oil, they've done this, they've done whatever they do. They've blessed the house, and and my feeling would be, geez, I hope it works. I hope they don't come back. That would be on my mind all the time. I hope it works. You know, and I know it is. So they didn't really educate me. They didn't really tell me what was really going on. I'm still halfway living in fear. So just give it a really research it and be objective. I mean, that's the whole point of this. Be objective. I mean, there's not a scientist around who would even give a second thought to the concept of demons. They know it's a religious construct. It's not part of reality. And even malevolent spirits there's stories going all over the place. But if they could hurt you or us, they would in far greater numbers. The fact is, they can't. It just doesn't happen, folks. So,
Kevin, see in the chat rooms asking, how does one help the client then if their belief systems are deep rooted in some form of demonology?
You go ahead.
Well, I probably have a different answer than you. I mean, you can
go ahead. You give yours. I'll give mine.
Well, I would first basically state something very similar to what Doug said. Now, if they're absolutely not buying into that, and they're in crisis, and they've identified that, you know, their belief system is such, like, let's say they're Catholic and they think that they need a priest to come in, then I would suggest that that's what they do. Because if it can be resolved for them in that way, then, you know, fine.
Sure.
But
I don't have I agree with that. Look, here's what I've done in the past with success. When somebody believes that they're under attack by some demon-type spirit, I will reason with them based on their belief system, which I do understand. And so I'll ask them questions, you know, to break the ice a little bit. What religion are you? You know, are you active? They may or may not be. Do you love God? Oh, yes, I love God. Do you believe that God protects you? Yes, I do. Then do you believe that God is... love is unconditional. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, all that stuff. So I set up the basis, so to speak. I lay down the foundation. Then I hit them with this. Well, if God loves is unconditional and he protects you, wouldn't it be safe to assume that he would protect you from demons? I mean, is that not a logical conclusion? It is. And so I tell them, you know, I was afraid of them too at one point in my life, and I prayed for protection, and they never bothered me. And so what needs to happen here is you pray out loud for protection and be earnest about it and do it out loud so that the angels can hear you, the demons can hear you, everybody can hear, and so you're basically setting up what you want, and God will back you up. Does that make sense to you? I ask them. And they always say yes. So it's worked in the past, and it's never later been an issue.
Great. Yeah,
I mean, it's WWJD. I say WWDD. Wait for it. Wait for it. What would Doug do?
Okay.
What, did that drop?
No.
Flat? Dang.
You know, one of the things I just want to caution people about doing, though, that when you have someone in crisis, you know, and let's say they're just not hearing what you're saying, you know, the last thing that you want to do is take away their defenses. So if they have a belief system, even if it's all maladaptive and not necessarily appropriate, if they're truly in crisis, you don't necessarily want to strip that from them. You know, there's another time and place to, like, get people, you know, to think differently. But again, you know, it's like what Doug was saying, you know, you can present an alternative explanation, but if they simply can't hear it, or it just, you see that whatever you're doing is making the situation worse, then you really need to back off, because it's not about blowing through the defense systems. It's not about winning the argument.
Right.
You know, it's about helping the client.
And so go with their belief systems if that's the case, because those belief systems are going to be deeply entrenched, and you're not going to overturn those in one, two nights.
So absolutely.
Go with it. You know, work, use their belief systems to help them, and yet do it in such a way, like I just explained, that that empowers them and that that does no harm. Rather than creating fear, I remove the fear because God will help them if that's what they believe. And if they don't believe it, then I'll resort to the objective evidence. Look, despite what you've seen on TV or stories you may have heard, we don't ever come across this stuff. This stuff just doesn't happen. So we need to look for alternative explanations rather than this, because this is, and even if it is happening, they can't harm you. So number one, right here, right now, lose the fear, because it's not, there's no support for it. That ought to reassure you a little bit, right? And that's what I would say to him.
So, time's flying, and we have another area that we wanted to talk about. So, how about we kind of segue to it in this manner? Hey, Mike?
He's coming back on. Oh, there he
okay.
is.
Okay. Can you see how many fingers I'm holding up for demonologists?
I see one.
Yeah, hey, okay, remote viewing in its finest. So let's talk about
it. Wow, he's good.
Finest. So, Mike, tell us what you've been doing with remote viewing.
Well, I received this course from one of my buddies online, and he just kind of passed along to me to check out, and it's Ed Dane's Remote Viewing, Learning Remote Viewing. And I just started actually taking the classes. He's got four DVDs. They're pretty intense, I would say, as far as how fast the pace is. I've only got through the first DVD, and I had, I'd say, 50% success on the four targets that were on the DVD. And then, of course, I got John and his wife involved, where she was actually picking out the targets and placing them in the envelopes, and then I was having John, who has not seen the pictures, relay the target numbers to me so I could remote view them. And, it's some of that stuff's kind of compelling. I'm actually surprised, you know, and Ed Dames, he touts his own program, as it were, and you know something? I'm actually learning a little bit with it, and I'm impressed so far. Now, I don't know, John, you were on the other end of it when I was sitting there sending you this information. I mean, what did you think?
Well, I was actually getting more and more impressed as time was passing. Now, I'll talk about the way we were doing this was Mike has a worksheet that he has to fill out, and he does illustrations and things in a very prescribed manner. And then what he would do is he would send it to me, and I'd look at it, and then I would open the envelope and see what the photo was. And I got to tell you, both times we did this, Mike pretty much hit all the key elements of these photos. Now, one of the things that he did in both of the photos is he identified either how many humans or how many animals were in the photo. And to me, that was pretty amazing because, you know, I'm in Virginia, Mike's in Arkansas, and I don't even know what's in these sealed envelopes. So there's no way that I tipped off anything to Mike. But he, in his drawings, he would draw these like different types of structures. And sometimes what he thought the structure was wasn't right. On the other hand, the way the structure was in his sketch compared to the composition of the photo, it was dead on. Hmm. And so, and then,
right,
then he had impressions.
I hadn't got to that part of the course.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, I'm like, wow, you know? Then he'd do stuff like, he's looked, the second one that we did, one of the things that Mike says is, I'm seeing a brown color with a pattern. Well, it was a picture of three giraffes. And, of course, they're brown spots. I mean, and a real bold pattern. And it was just like, wow. And then in that particular sketch, he had drawn this, like, line of the main subject at kind of like this, like, 45-degree angle. And then there was a vertical line, which turned out to directly correspond with the horizon line in the photo. And this other vertical line basically was on par with how the main giraffe was standing in the photo. And it was just, I don't know, man, it was very compelling. So,
yeah, and the middle one that was eating the grass, I'd actually called out that there was green color involved with that one. So,
yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Then,
go ahead.
Yeah, and you also had said something about with the giraffes. Now, I don't know. I've never been around a giraffe, so I don't know if they smell. But you were talking about them being smelly.
Yeah,
stinky.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's what was interesting. You know, I was getting smells. I was getting colors, general shape, pattern descriptions. I tell you what was fascinating to me. Now, these pictures are cut out of, I'm not sure where she got them, but the structure I had in my picture was in the upper right-hand corner of all these different, you know, line drawings. Well, it's not in the picture that John has in his envelope. John goes back and compares this picture to where it was cut out of, and sure as the world, there's a structure in the top right-hand corner where that picture was cut out.
Yep, exactly where he had placed it in the sketch.
That's pretty cool. So our own Mike has psychic abilities. Who would have thunk?
Yeah.
Well, and
well,
from
would,
what I'm understanding with this, everybody does, you know.
Yeah. Well, everybody except me.
Well, and that's the cool part of this is actually taking a logical, analytical person, and through the protocol, it sets the analytical mind aside and starts accessing the subconscious mind and the information coming out of it. From what he's explaining, the subconscious mind has its own way of figuring out problems, and it's not skewed by imagination or thought processes the same way that our analytical conscious mind is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you get the information.
Let's talk about these coordinate things. I mean, that's something you guys explained to me the other day, that's one thing that I had always wondered about. You know, you get the coordinates, and what the heck were they? You know, I'm thinking, are they latitude and longitude, or, well, you know, what exactly are these coordinates? So can you explain to the
audience? Yeah, I can go into that a little bit. Yeah, well, okay, what the protocol consists of, you know, you have blind targets, which the way I established that with John and his wife is his wife went and chose pictures and wrote two random four-digit numbers on these pictures and then placed the pictures inside an envelope and wrote the numbers again on the outside of the envelope so John could see the numbers only. What the numbers are, I think, are irrelevant. As in spatial coordinates, what I think they are numbers that tie that information to those two numbers. And I, you know, this is just a theory, but if there's an Akashic record out there, by that person signifying those numbers mean this picture, that gives a point of reference for a person to go in and remote view or do psychic type work and actually be able to look at what they're talking about. Without any kind of information being skewed. So, I mean, really the numbers in themselves mean nothing. They're just random numbers. They're four digits apiece, which what I think that has to do with, I did a little bit of math in college and high school, is once you get above a certain number of digits in a number, and then you have two different random numbers, the chances you producing the same two-digit or the same two random numbers and have it associated with the picture are slim and none. So you don't get a cross information going on, you know, like somebody else's designated numbers, the exact same numbers to a different location or whatever. So,
Well, apparently they are, and that was what fascinated me when you guys were explaining it to me, is, and you'd mentioned the Akashic Record, the Cosmic Library, whatever, but apparently when those numbers are assigned, it's almost as if they're assigned in, you know, cosmically in some way, because then John takes these numbers and gives them to you. He has no idea what's in the envelope, and somehow those numbers are linked to whatever's in there, and yet you're not even near there. So now Mike is focusing in on these coordinates, which identifies these papers in this envelope. I mean,
right? And what happens,
how does that
essentially?
All tie together? That's a rhetorical
question. As far as, okay, well, here's the way the protocol works, more or less, is you're given the two four-digit numbers. You write them down immediately. Off to the side, it's called an ideogram, but you quickly just scribble whatever in this little square box. And somehow, I'm not sure what the process is there, but that somehow ties it to your conscious mind, those coordinates, so you're able to focus on them. Then you start going down this list, and the list are textures, colors, smells, tastes, temperatures, sounds, dimensions, and aesthetic impact. In each of those categories, if you spend over 3.5 seconds in it, then you drop down to the next category, because that's when your analytical mind will start actually kicking in. You just want subconscious ideas coming in, and you write them down immediately. Any time that you get your brain saying, oh, that's a truck, or that's a bird, or that's a giraffe, you stop immediately at that point. There's a column over the side that says analytical overlays. And you write it down, and then you set your pen down for like a 1 second or 2 seconds, pick the pen back up. And what that essentially does is it disconnects your mind from associating that thought to what you were working on. And then you go back and you keep going down those categories. Okay? And at that point, when you're done doing your category list, then the next process is you go in and do a sketch, just a whatever comes to mind. Circles usually mean biological entities. Straight lines that are horizontal usually mean ground. Squares or angled lines are usually mean structure or some kind of built, you know, something that's been built, usually. And then, of course, you got motion lines, where you can put that in, too, where you're seeing motions and stuff like that. And that's just the first step of it. There's, you know, then you have to identify what's the primary target, secondary target, third target. And then you go into each one of those and break it down the exact same way. You know, go down through your categories. And after you're done doing all this process, then you take each of those, the primary, secondary, and tertiary targets, the pictures you've drawn, and you combine them into a site template. And that's your final product that you're supposed to be able to actually tell what you're looking at. I'm not to the stage in the course where they actually teach you how to interpret your site template, so I'm not good at that yet. But evidently, the process of what I'm learning is working, because, I mean, even John, I heard John on the other end of the line going, well, this is interesting, you know. You know, the way John responds to stuff, it's but it is. It's really, it's compelling. That's the best way I can put it. It's very compelling. I don't know what to make of it yet. I hadn't, you know, done it long enough to where I can actually positively say that there's not something else going on with it. But as far as I can tell, it is legit as legit can be.
One of the things that happened that I was just totally amazed at, Mike was saying, I'm sensing in this one photograph like a person standing behind bars. And on his sketch, he had these like five vertical bars. And in the actual photograph, it was a photograph of a painting, and it was in a synagogue. And there was a menorah on a table, and it had seven vertical candles, and behind the candles, a man was standing. So it totally looked like someone standing behind bars.
Hmm.
But it was candles. But what he was perceiving was like dead on. I mean, it wasn't accurate in the sense that it was behind bars, but it was this man standing behind these vertical elements. And I was just amazed. It was like, wow.
Huh. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a good guesser.
Yeah.
So there's some points in the chat room about the coordinates. You know, can remote viewing be done without coordinates, without the numbers?
At this stage, I'm not sure. I think what the coordinate system's for is to keep the target blind. I did know in one part of the beginning of the course, he's mentioned setting up and establishing your own targets, which that might completely get rid of the coordinate system to where you can say, okay, I want to look here and see what I see. You know, where you can actually say, I want you to search this region, or I want you to look and see what this person's doing right now. You know, it may be what this is, in essence, at this level, is I'm thinking it's a training the subconscious mind and your analytical mind to fire off properly for this to happen. Because it is actually a concert between the two. Because when you come out of the session, you still have to interpret what you're seeing. You still have to, you know, use the analytical part of your brain when you're doing the final drawing to put the drawing together. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about that balance. And I don't know, Gregory can say something on this, and so could John. But the best information comes from... you know, and in essence, not thinking about it and letting it flow in. You know,
right.
From a psychic's point of view, and from what Ed Dames is saying, is the government actually had rounded up a bunch of psychics, had studied their process, and that's where they've got this protocol from. They've taken the best of all the different psychics that they researched. And produced a protocol that they could teach anybody how to do this.
Huh. Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, and obviously there's some pretty compelling support for its authenticity, even as we've discussed tonight. So we'll have to get some more discussion on remote viewing going in the Paranexus forums.
Yeah, I was going to say, Mike's going to actually be... Well, Mike, why don't you tell them what you're going to be posting?
Well, I'm going to be posting the actual entire template that I've been doing, and then I'm going to post the picture with the results so people can actually see the, you know, they can actually compare what I got and what the actual picture was. That way they can see how close this stuff really is hitting, and it's just amazing. I mean, like I said, I didn't have any expectations coming into it, you know. I've never believed I was psychic by any means or anything like that for a very long time. And what this is suggesting is everybody has that potential, but it's a matter of training the brain to operate properly to access the information. So, but yeah, I will be posting it on the forums. I've already started the thread, and as soon as I get the pictures, I will post the PDFs for everybody to observe. As we keep doing this.
Yeah, that'll be a cool research project. We'll have to get Brian in on that to see how many people can participate in that. So, interesting topics tonight. We got a few minutes left. And I wanted to talk about Paranexus a little bit for the sake of those who are not familiar with it, in a different way, perhaps, than I've done in the past. And I'm just going to think out loud here for a minute, and you guys can chime in if you want. But 2.5 years ago, Paranexus was formed as a conference that we did have in 2008, and we hope to have some again in the future. But it really quickly evolved into an association of anomalous researchers, people who are studying ufology or haunting phenomena, or parapsychology, even cryptozoology, anything. And, of course, you know, I've always had a deep fascination with existence and consciousness and the human condition. So, You know, that's one of the things that was always of importance to me. You know, if we're going to study this, let's study it to find answers that will benefit humanity. And so that's pretty much the premise that Paranexus was formed on. And we have been trying to attract like-minded folks for the last 2.5 years, and we have. And Paranexus has grown quite a bit. We incorporated last September. We're yet awaiting our 501c3 determination letter, which should be here before hell freezes over. And, well, the wheels of the IRS move rather slowly, I can tell you. So, you know, we've come a long way. We have a board. We have some great people. We have great members. And, you know, I think that perhaps I've always studied, you know, we obviously haven't had people flock to Paranexus to join, and there are definitely some reasons for that based in human nature. But, you know, if you're somebody who has a real interest in anomalous phenomena, paranormal, or parapsychology, or of any of it, you know, we invite you to come and join us, because we're people just like you. We have a deep desire to understand what's going on. And I will not take no for an answer in terms of we can't figure this out. I never say that's too hard. I always ask, how hard can it be? And I think a lot of folks at Paranexus have the same attitude. How hard can it be? Let's figure it out. And there's so many breakthroughs that have been coming around in quantum physics and in the area of metaphysics and consciousness that all, you know, interweaves into this whole thing. And it gives us insights into what could be going on. I mean, look at the remote viewing thing. And so what I'm really trying to say here is that we're people, we have a strong desire and interest in this, and we warmly invite you to come and join us. Because only by doing it together will we figure this stuff out. And there are no egos. There's no competition in Paranexus. We don't compete. We work with people. We work together. And we invite your perspectives. And your perspectives don't have to necessarily agree with ours. We want different folks with different takes on things. Because, you know, it helps to sharpen us all. And so that's pretty much what I wanted to say. I think a lot of folks come to Paranexus really don't understand that they're real-life human beings behind the whole thing. You know, yeah, it's a nice website, and there's a lot of stuff on it, and we offer more benefits than any other association I even know of, and quite often at a far less membership fee than many other organizations, and that's in all fields. And so come and take a look. You know, we want you. We want people come in and share their expertise, share their knowledge, share their perspective, because we all bring something to the table, and that's what we're looking for. So I wanted to get that out, get it off my chest, and basically emphasize that we're people and we want you. So come now. Now. Don't be so demanding, Doug. All right, guys, we've talked about demonology. And we're all going to be having a cross-burning ceremony at John's house tonight.
Well, let's bring up orbs then, so you can be a part of it, too.
Yeah. You want to get... And so, folks, don't forget this coming Thursday. Who do we have on this coming Thursday? I believe it's...
Gregory.
Gregory, yes.
National medium Mike Brooker. He will be on the show this week, and then next week, Informal Paranormal will be again on Monday night. So join us this Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern for Paranexus Universe, Gregory P. Kent hosting Psychic Perspective with his guest, Mike Brooker. We appreciate everybody joining us in the chat, those who are listening live, those who are listening by archive. John, thanks for sharing your insights tonight.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a good night.
And Mike, thanks for screening the calls we never got.
Yeah, welcome.
And we're going to leave you with a little music by the talented Kevin MacLeod. Hope everybody has a great week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.